Welcome, subscribers. We are talking with Michael Tesarion, and we're going to dive into a topic, I guess, that is slowly kind of creeping in through the back door of our culture. And as you all know, Michael prominently talks about stuff like genetic manipulation in his research, in his books and his videos. And he points out that this is, of course, is something that we can find traits of in the past, but this is now again becoming common in our world, in our time, and genetics and nanotechnology and stuff like this seems to be developing into the new kind of IT bubble almost. And I wanted to spend some time today with Michael on topics like transhumanism and, of course, also the development of AI, artificial intelligence, and the cyborg, and much, much more. And how this kind of connect with stuff like the implementation of the implantable microchip. And Michael, I've felt for a long time now that, you know, kind of humanity is in for big changes up ahead, and I never thought of this as something to do with technological improvements of humanity, but now this seems to be kind of developing as a very plausible scenario. What's your take on that?
Well, first we have to realize that technology is not something new. Just even looking at the meaning of the word technology is an Egyptian word. Tech, T-E-K, was how it was spelled back in Egyptian times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was a religion. It was part of a worship, connects to the name of the serpent. So we have the serpent symbol being very much at the heart of the symbolism connected to technology. But technology has been on this planet for aeons. In my work, you see, we were visited about 50,000 years ago by beings, off-world beings, who have been, you know, instrumental in our civilization during a great war that they had in the past, the so-called War of the Gods that all the mythologies talk about. They lost all of their technological hardware. This was a war that was fought with incredible weaponry and sophisticated hardware, but the war was so severe that it actually precipitated enormous earth changes. And a lot of authors and a lot of scientists have been able to discover now information that the earth did go through these great cataclysms, but they haven't drawn the right conclusions. One of the most important understandings is that the technology of the ancients, the technology that built the, you know, the Temple of Solomon, the technology that built the pyramid, the technology that the Maya are known to have used in their calendars, the technology that built the first ships that, you know, navigated the seas in ages long past, basically the technology that created the ancient world and also the empires of the historical age. Technology was lost. So when we find ourselves today in a silicon age, in a cybernetic age, we have to understand there's nothing new about that. It's only because we have a myopic historical vision and that we have historical amnesia that we think that it's only since the Renaissance or it's only since the industrial age or the agricultural age, you see, that man built machines and man had, you know, railways and man started getting into the concept of machinery and technology and all of that.
Yeah.
This is an age-old movement, and we are just being provided or given a very small, limited vision, modern vision, into it. But if you look at the symbols that the corporations of the great technological corporations are using today, and some of the memes and the, you know, the logos that they're using, you will see that they are also referring to their ancient roots. So what we're seeing today is but the arrowhead of a long arrow stretching way back into time.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing that kind of might be ridiculous at first to do this comparison, but, you know, there's a lot of series and stuff in our popular culture now, like, you know, Battlestar Galactica and stuff like this, who kind of, I guess they relay this kind of general idea that you know, in our past we had, you know, this very sophisticated technology, and I guess in that series they kind of, you know, are chased by different, you know, basically robots, or they create this AI that takes life of its own and kind of enslaves humanity, I guess. But
that's right. Yeah, the organic computer, the Kubrick.
Yeah,
Everyone from Kubrick all the way back to the famous sci-fi Quatermass of British science fiction.
Yeah.
To Star Trek, to Blake Seven, to Doctor Who. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have had many people under the guise of fiction, even Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. These are people in the know. But they were in the know, so much in the know, that they knew that if they didn't write their work in fiction, they would lose their jobs, they'd lose their lives. So they knew, they understood that the Royal Academy and the Royal Societies and the Royal Dynasties of the world, who are funding these Silicon Valley groups and funding this genetic research, because even though they call the Silicon Valley Silicon Valley, three quarters of the companies in the Silicon Valley have nothing to do with silicon. They're all genetics. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah.
The Silicon Valley is three quarters of the economy there is run by companies that are into genetics, not just silicon chips. So there's a big disguise going on. And the people who knew, either from insiders, you know, who were whistleblowers, or people who had used their own intelligence to study the subject outside, they knew that if they were to talk about the true occult roots of technology, which is what I'm into, they knew that they would not get very far. And in the Victorian age and in the early 20th century, they knew they wouldn't, their books would never survive. So they wrote in fiction. So you're absolutely right that Gene Roddenberry and Glenn Larson and Gene L. Kuhn and many of the Doctor Who are brilliant, brilliant men who wrote these stories, starting, of course, with Terry Nation. These are enormous influences in my work. Because they tell you as it is, but they tell you as it is in a right brain way.
Yeah.
That you have to connect the dots. They just put it there in an artistic form and leave you. You see, I mean, the famous creature that Terry Nation used to write about in Doctor Who was the Daleks. Anyone who's a Doctor Who fan and other people have heard about the Daleks, right?
Yeah.
It turned out that the Dalek is a word in Czechoslovakian that means alien being.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There we
One
go.
One from out there. So is this coincidence or is it intentional? You know, these people work on a highly symbolic level.
Yeah.
And I find no fault at all in some of these incredible fictional works to tell us an amazing tale about the world we're living in.
Exactly. And, you know, you have stuff like, of course, you know, movies, the Matrix, you know, we got the AI taking over and basically enslaving us, putting us in these pod world, basically, and then we have the Terminator, you know, walking, talking machines that, slaves of. Yeah, I mean, could these be kind of also reflections of our, I guess, our you know, fears on a more psychological level, that we kind of deal with these scenarios in this way, that we make movies about it and then go watch them?
They are. They're very much that. They are also, you know, parts of our alter ego. Basically, a lot of what the science fiction people are saying, what I think, I think the greatest writers tend to talk about this post-human man, you know, the cybernetic man, which is a creature. We've talked on other shows about the inauthentic man, right, and about the man's whole life is motivated by the guilt that he has from living an inauthentic life.
Yeah, exactly.
So the technological man is also connected to this guilt complex.
Yeah.
If you live your life so in an anti-human way, meaning if you have no idea, you're living as a human being, but you're not really human. You've dumbed yourself down to the level of such an automaton. You're basically a programmed automaton because you've been programmed by your parents. You've been programmed by your peers. You've been programmed by the teachers, you see. You've been programmed by the media, as almost every young adult today is programmed by the media. It's almost unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's almost working on remote control. Anything they see on television, 5 minutes later, they're into it. Worse than ever before.
Yeah.
You know, and once, if you do this and you reduce yourself, so this mechanistic, or what you might call technotronic, this is the word that, you know, Brzezinski uses, the technotronic world that they're trying to create. Well, they've been successful. Man is living as a technotronic automaton. So he is reduced himself to the, what in Doctor Who they have the Cybermen. A part human, part organic, part human. It's thinking. It's all in your thinking. Your thinking can become so super rational, so technological, so anti-human, so anti-organic, so anti-feminine, that your thinking can become literally the thinking of a robot, of a machine, something that can, in fact, be programmed. That is the origin of the technological man. And, of course, that individual will feel more at home in a world of technology and cold machines than he will amongst warm human beings with passions and with reality. Star Trek, you know, Captain Kirk is the perfect example of this passionate human.
Yeah.
You know, who would even argue with God, which is what he did in Star Trek V.
Yeah.
You know, which is the projection of the human ego.
Yeah.
As why would God want with a starship kind of concept? This is a human. Captain Kirk represents this human being.
Yeah.
Who is so rebellious and so free in his mind and his thinking that he'll even argue with God at the last minute. It's a brilliant, brilliant motif.
Yeah, yeah.
And people get out Star Trek 1, which is the movie I'm thinking of. They have a fantastic rendition in there that there is another kind of unification that can take place, which is androgyny. At the end of that movie, you basically see a magical act of a chemical wedding. If you watch that movie again, you will see that the two beings, male and female, come together and they join in this unison. And they literally blend together. It's a fantastic movie about the chemical wedding, the first Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
And they have to, but first of all, you know, the woman appears to them as a robot, as an automaton, as a probe.
Yeah.
She gets possessed, you see. So they're talking about the feminine being possessed by the masculine first in a negative way, being possessed by the spirit of the technological brain. And just being used as a sort of a, you know, an android for that. And then later on, when she recovers her femininity, which is a great story of the loss of femininity and the reawakening to that. And I don't mean in females. Females can be as, just as masculine as most men. And some men can be very feminine. So I'm not talking about gender here.
Yeah.
I'm talking about metagender. I'm talking about archetypes.
Yeah. You know, you spoke also, about, of course, about the kind of, I guess we can call it robotification, basically, of humanity. And but it seems to be a kind of a misnomer that we are kind of awaiting this, you know, this, as if we are to put it in Star Trek terms, the Borg race taking over, or the cyborg then. But just as you say, it feels like it's not necessary, because it does the trick with basic programming, and we have kind of... Many humans today, I guess, live on this basic, you know, emotional level, that they are kind of waiting for a signal and then process it, and then, you know, basically gives it back. It's like a very, very mechanical approach to life in general. And there we have the robot right there, just as you say.
That's right. Dumb, you know, Malthus and these philosophers wanted to dumb down man to the level of the machine.
Yeah.
On a more psychological level, this identification, this robotization, as you're saying, this automatic, like a man being an automaton, happens because man has literally identified with his leaders. See, the leaders are already, in my belief, literally physically descended from Atlanteans, off-world beings who were technologically advanced.
Yeah.
We are living in the mirror image of our masters who are technological, even in the prehistorical age. They're making us in their image.
Yeah.
We are their servants.
Yeah.
No more and no less. They have only kept us around, and certainly the middle class is in great jeopardy now because they really don't need us anymore.
Yeah.
So from one angle, you see, they've only kept us around because we've been of service to them in their journey to build back the technology to get to the point where they can restore the weaponry and the technology that they have. These are technotronic people from a technotronic planet, from a technotronic age on their own.
Yeah.
And they came here, infected this planet, and have been basically making us in their image. However, the dumbed down, we still have a human aspect to ourselves. But you see, the human aspect is identifying with the power. I talked about this in the presentation, The Future of Mankind, that how it is that we identify with those who have power. We give our power away, and then we're seduced into identifying with the object of our hatred. So in other words, by identifying with the leaders, we model ourselves on these cyborg-type Atlantean descendants, the creature, the children of the Nephilim.
Yeah.
And because we are so in... The slave think allows us to identify with those who might murder us, who might kill us, the people who pay our bills, the people who give us a certain amount of life, survival, you know, enough for survival.
Yeah.
So we have psychologically identified with our own controllers, and the controllers use this identification to the greatest maximum means.
Yeah.
And therefore we ingest and digest everything that these people hand us. So if they say you're going to work, you know, so many days of a week, or you're going to be a slave in a factory with no time off, or you're going to work down the mines, we do it. And if they say you're going to go and kill in our name, and you're going to butcher fellow human beings in our name, we do it. And if they say you're going to outsource your jobs and impoverish your own country, and we're going to pull up the ladders of the middle class, we do it. And if they're going to say you're going to rape nature and poison the oceans, we do it.
Sure.
And if you're going to believe in false religion, you know, just to keep you all pacified on the emotional side, because we know you're a bunch of emotional, you know, chaotic individuals.
Yeah.
We'll make sure that you have that handled for you to keep you warm at night. We'll believe that too. So we're living in a situation in which we are plastic. We are literally living in a cybernetic age.
Yeah.
But it's brought about by our identification, not with the great teachers, not with the great masters,
yeah.
not with the great naturalists. But we, because remember, they're out there as well. So how come we haven't identified with Emerson and Thoreau, and with some of the great masters who've talked about this? And how come we didn't, you know, listen to Hahnemann and to Paracelsus and to all the ecologists, you see, and all of these people who tell us, and by the way, they can even show us a finer and better way to be, by the way. So even if you put it on paper, what they have, as against what the technotronic world has, they come out trumps every time.
Yeah.
So then it can't just be a rational decision, because if you put the ecologists and the pantheists on one side and ask what they have got, they have a beautiful template of how to live.
Yeah.
That roots us back in the ancestral past, but also puts us closer to nature and gives us a more brighter future. It appeases us spiritually much greater. It gives us greater bonding with one another, which everybody seems to be crying out for.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why is it that we turn then to, you know, the world of the disco and the acid houses and the drug culture and the addictive culture and the media culture? See, so it's not just a simple choice.
Yeah.
It's deeper than choice, Henrik. It goes to the level of identification with our masters, our the people who control the strings on which we move. And we have to deal with this identification and realize, like I've said before, that the identification is the bastard child. It's like the abortion of the guilt that we carry for each of us choosing an inauthentic life.
Michael, what about the microchip? A lot of people are talking about this. Is this the final kind of nail in the coffin that would prevent us from ever, you know, returning to all the things that you are talking about here, basically?
No, you see, in one way, I believe that the technologies that are being born are neutral. The technologies can be used as equally by the good man as they can by the evil man. And when I say evil man, I mean a man that's turned off from his own humanity, simply.
Yeah.
Right? A man who does evil acts because he's morally destitute.
Mm.
The good man is somebody who's turned on to realize that if he harms another, he harms himself, like Socrates said.
Yeah.
But see television and computer internet and I know even cell phones, I love them. I think there's nothing wrong with this technology.
No.
Because it's all intention.
Yeah.
Everything is mental attitude and intention. It's not the machine. The machine can be used or turned off by a good man, by good people in society, and under the control of the good person, there's nothing wrong at all with his technologies.
Yeah.
And that's why trying to wean children off television is not going to work, you know, and try to, because that's another form of control. It's another form of telling a kid what to do. Well, they're not going to listen. And because you've already created the stuff for them that's rubbish.
Yeah.
So how can you come along and then say, can you please turn off the rubbish we sold to you? They're going to turn around and go, no, you're the one who created it for us.
Yeah.
You see, and in their own humble way, why do you think so many kids try to play Dungeons and Dragons and watch Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, you see, and get into all of his medieval... Why is the medieval... You know, they even asked the Black Sabbath one time, the great band Black Sabbath, they asked the lead singer, hey, isn't your band real evil? And he goes, well, I wouldn't say evil, but I certainly would say medieval. And he turned it all around on them, saying, because we are medieval, because we want to go back to a more moral age in which a man was a man and a woman was a woman, and, you know, and people stood up for some ethics.
Yeah.
And he goes, you can call us medieval, I'll take that, but we're certainly not evil.
Yeah.
We don't worship the dark side. Well, there you have it. So the technology, if it's used by, you know, like in Star Trek, they often even show you some of these super advanced, look at even the Vulcan race.
Mm, yeah.
You know? These are people who worked spiritually and who work with technology. And,
of course,
that's why Gene Roddenberry and Terry Nation and Rod Serling, they were all fans of technology.
Yeah.
Not once in those movies do they ever show you, oh, the evil machine, because they were too sophisticated for that.
Hmm.
They understood that even having a technological world, art is a form of technology. Don't you need brushes? Don't you need sophisticated paints that are made out of, you know, the ochres? Somebody has to go and process all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the right kind of canvas, and the right kind of paints, and the right kind of detergents. You see, so there's, you know, archery.
Yeah.
What does it take to make a fantastic bow, a proper bow, an arrow?
Hmm.
You know, guitar, my goodness. How do you make the strings on the guitar? How do you wind those strings and make them at the right shape and the right thickness and the right gauge?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you bend the wood? You see, that's technology,
isn't
it? It's
all technology. Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. See, so technology is not wrong. But there's nothing wrong with the computer. It's who's using it.
Yeah.
And for what agenda?
Absolutely.
So the microchip is human beings at their greatest, inventing things which are absolutely fantastic.
Mm.
Nothing evil with that. Nothing wrong with that. But it's unfortunately what is wrong with it is that it becomes in the place of something else. If you have the digital watch, the digital watch replaced the more organic circle of time that people needed to see on their wrist.
Yeah.
If for years you're seeing the 12 divisions and understanding time to be a cycle, if then that is replaced by a digital watch that merely shows you a bunch of numbers, then yes, it is something wrong there because you're being divorced from something that your mind really does need to think about, which is time as a cycle, instead of just a sequence of numbers that's just appearing and flashing in front of you.
That's true, that's true.
You know, or that the, the alarm is Chopin's beautiful, preludes set to some stupid blinking alarm clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's negative, I would say. Your wristwatch is bleeping out, Beethoven's, piano concerto. Yeah, that stuff is obviously, not warranted.
Yeah. How about stuff like connecting directly to the internet through, a brain-computer interface in regards to, they're trying to create this, what could refer to the global infosphere, and this is, in some sense, I get the feeling that this is, we have this, at least I have this idea, of Atlantis technology and stuff like this being more, esoteric than techno, technology-wise in that sense, in regards to that being, crystals and lights and stuff like this, but why not create a very, very good, as I say, global infosphere where people can, tap into information, basically, whatever they want to know, directly into our brain. Is there any danger here, do you think?
The danger is because it's based on a misunderstanding that man already doesn't have the knowledge of the universe inside of him. It's like going down a one-way, the wrong street. So the idea, it's not that the technology will be negative again, it's that the idea behind it is an idea that is born out of imperfection.
Yeah, yeah.
The further that man gets divorced from his soul, and especially these people who run the world, the technology, they're very divorced from it. They have the idea, that we don't have the reservoir of knowledge of what I call the wisdom body or the living oracle within inside us.
So
once you've divided from the living oracle, then naturally you're going to sense your limitation. You're going to sense that you have limited understanding about life, and that you have a lot of questions, and there's lots of puzzles in life in general.
Yeah.
So then we start turning, to the machine, to the internet, to the World Wide Web, to all of those computerized data banks and memory banks, hoping that we're going to find reality there. This is what science is all about. Science is not occultism in that sense. Meta-science, because I'm a great believer in science, but I'm a believer in meta-science, where science and occultism join. In the meta-scientific world, we understand that it's just like what we do with the Project Timescopes that we have, that we've created in numerology and my mystery school. And, there's more scientists belong to that than occultists belong to it. Why? It's because the true engineer understands that we're already knowledgeable within. We have an inner oracle, an inner source of deep wisdom within us.
Yeah.
And that a machine is meant to be some kind of device to bring that knowledge out.
Hmm.
So the scientists that I work with are people who don't mind making machines and don't mind creating algorithms and computer programs, and they work heavily in the technological field. But they work in the reverse of what you mentioned.
Yeah.
They're saying that the knowledge exists within man as a living thing. And we don't mind creating an astrological system or a database system, that mirrors and reflects that so that others have easy access to it, that mirrors what is coming out from the human being within.
Yeah, yeah.
On numbers, because meta-scientists realize that numbers have tremendous power, that numbers are merely forms of vibration for energies. They represent archetypal energy. But the other scientist, the sorcerer, right? Because there's a difference between magic and sorcery. I've just talked about is magic, bringing the magic, the magical voice from within you by way of a device or a with the assistance of a machine.
Yeah, yeah.
But the machine is now an agent of the spirit.
Hmm.
Well, the sorcerer gets in the way of magic. That's how you define sorcery, black sorcery.
Mm-hmm.
Sorcery is that which stops the magic coming into your life. And believe me, we are definitely run by sorcerers in this world who prevent the human magic from coming through. What they do is they make the machine control the magic. They make the machine dominate. So in the Blade Runner type of world, these are individuals who dumb down the person to the extent that they're very cut off from their inner wisdom body, and therefore they must then turn to the bestial, collectivized database that exists outside of yourself and say, you plug into this. So then I say, hey, it's not what you're plugging into, it's what might be plugging into you in reverse.
Exactly.
This is the warning I keep giving remote viewers. Yeah, you may be mighty psychic, and you might have studied all sorts of remote viewing. That doesn't interest me in the slightest.
Yeah.
You might think you're tuning into something. Hey, what force is watching you?
Yeah.
What aspect might be vampirizing your vision or might be using you as an oracle? Because it's only a thin line between a remote viewer acting from his own will and then being used by a higher form of intelligence, you see, up the ladder.
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting.
So I believe that this collective brain that you're talking about, that, you know, that might exist in technology, this worldwide brain, yes, they're using fancy terms like global brain.
Yeah.
Yes, that is deadly, because it's going to replace your own natural intelligence.
Yeah,
it's going to further dumb down your own psychic, intelligence.
You know, I read just today, I think it was my brother pointed out regarding a guy called Kevin Warwick, and allegedly he's like the first official cyborg or something. He wrote a book called I, Cyborg, and, you know, just reading shortly about his approach to this, it was... very, you know, five sense, very material science in the sense that he viewed it like that we have to that we only have the five senses as human beings and that we're very limited, and again, it wasn't evil in his approach. He simply stated, you know, that why not improve that when we, you know, with machine and technology that we can, you know, see more of the spectrum and stuff like this. But again, it was nothing like we are actually involved in a spiritual process here where we can access this kind of information anyway without the technology.
Well, see, don't you see that from the time of the Christian church, nature has been de-spiritualized?
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as Christianity came on board, what was the first thing that it did? It tried to demonize nature.
Yeah.
It said that there is no spirit. Nature might be matter, material, they call it, but it doesn't have any spirit. And if it does, the only spirit that inhabits nature is the devil. He's out there to tempt you. He's hiding there.
Yeah.
You know, he's the erotic demon who's going to seduce you. So they've successfully demonized nature, Henrik. The next thing to demonize is the human being himself.
Yeah.
Meaning to de-spiritualize your mind. They have to start with nature first because, they, as I've been saying, nature and mind were once connected in this, what is known as holistic. We're not the hierarchy, we're a holarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is all brain thinking. It's what's known as polyphrenic thought, where your mind is omnidirectional. Now you are in a monophrenic thought system.
Yeah.
So they've succeeded in demonizing and de-spiritualizing nature, but they don't stop there. These same forces now have to de-spiritualize you. And they have their model men, these agents, who will talk about this. Because once you de-spiritualize the human body and the human mind, then you open the way for this kind of cyborg type of mentality to exist.
Yeah.
And because it is more efficient, and it is because it's not troubled by emotion, because this whole thing is rooted in the theme of the talk that I did in L.A. If you have a dark, negative relationship with your emotions, and your emotions become, because of that relationship, darker and more toxic as a result because you've lost the way of processing it, then naturally you don't want to live in a toxic situation, so you'll start to develop a toxic relationship to emotion.
Yeah.
Because your emotions are no longer pure to have a good relationship with, and they're so uncomfortable to possess inside yourself that it's very likely, just as Steve Quayle and other writers have said, that we may in fact want a post-human cybernetic world. The motive, though, is because we're unhappy living with our emotions. And the reason why we're unhappy living with our emotions is because we have not properly, psychoanalytically, dealt with those, so they've become so toxic, so that by the time you're 18 to 25, and certainly by the time you're 30, you're absolutely running headlong from yourself. You're in complete and utter pathological need to get away from who you really are, into the world or into another person, you see?
Yeah, yeah.
Or into the media-created fantasy world. You start living in a fantasy. You're getting away from the emotions because the emotions are toxic, and you've forgotten the way to process these emotions. You start living in the small corner of your brain, the frontal lobes. They promise you excellence. They promise you efficiency. They promise you this world that's clean and unmolested by the troublesome emotions.
Yeah.
You know something? I have no problem seeing the whole world paying for that, not only being forced on them. I have no doubt that the world will be begging for it, because when you do not deal with your emotions and you develop an unnatural, unhealthy relationship with your emotional self, there's only one road to go on, basically.
Could we see at this point a crossroads in how humanity develops from this point and onwards, that we're actually are going to divide into different species, basically?
I would say that is one of the big themes. So when we talk about 2012 and the incipient end of history, it might in fact be the beginning of the end of the human, the truly human, what we might call truly human world.
Yeah.
I really do believe this. That's why I incorporated this message into the end of the Future of Mankind talk.
Yeah.
Because I'm very much, you see, I actually can see it happening right now. That's why I'm into it. Because I actually see it now.
Yeah.
But I think that it's going to be by 2012 where it becomes an open series of choices from people. What I believe we're in now, in 2006, moving into 2007, I believe we're seeing the final frustration with the human.
Yeah.
I think that human beings are now coming to the end of what they have known before as the human life, as human beings. They may be human machine beings tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, does not. But what we're seeing now is that the human is getting tired of being human. And we've already talked about the reasons as to why that is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because he's in a state of inner, deremption. He's in a state of absolute inner delinquency and decrepitude.
Yeah.
See, the ego was born, the ego can rise to its prime, and the ego can die. So there's a lot of tie-ins here. But astrologically speaking, the age of Aquarius is a technological era. Anyone who knows about Aquarius and the bad side of Aquarius knows that it's all about technology.
Hmm.
It knows it's all about the super machine. So yes, the age of Aquarius may not be a positive thing, as so many people have been, you know, ranting on in the New Age movement.
Yeah,
but then we know who's been funding the New Age movement is the Sabian Society.
Yeah.
So their agents have been all the way through the New Age movement, disseminating lie after lie after lie.
Hmm.
I have no time for the New Age movement whatsoever. It's to me, it's filled with charlatans and liars.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see, we are in danger of having this divide, this split taking place, because man is in absence of humanness. I believe the next 5 years are going to tell us just how far that diagnosis goes.
Yeah.
Hmm. You know, and tomorrow you may in fact have a organization out there, a technological organization that can literally promise you a virtual type of existence tomorrow. Yeah, it could easily happen.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
people will be running for it, Henrik. I believe that the mark of the beast is not something that's going to be put on your forehead against your will.
Yeah,
as so many of the people in the Christian right think it is.
Exactly, yeah.
If it was, then why are they falling for the satanic, atomistic form of evangelism that is sweeping all over America and all over the world? They're accepting it.
Yeah, exactly. Totally blind. But we have this scenario now where downloading into the machine, like a kind of a, you have the old stuff about the cryogenic chambers, people who freeze themselves and stuff like this, and think they're going to be revived in like a thousand years or something like that. But I guess what we could see also is that you could download your soul. I know that there is technology being developed now that actually researches this. You can download into like a pod or something, and they're gonna shoot that out of to another planet or something. And meanwhile, I guess they think that the Earth is gonna decay and die or something. I don't know.
Right. Well, movies like Judge Dredd and Fifth Element and Vanilla Sky. Remember Vanilla Sky, where the guy's basically in a hologram of his own projection?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And then later on, they actually subliminally put this in because they don't explain it. But the company behind that type of technology is called the Elves.
Yeah, yeah.
Elves. Anyone who's read, the Priesthood of the Illies or listened to Jordan Maxwell knows that these Elves is just another term for the Nephilim.
Yeah, yeah.
The ones who live on the hill, right? And the villagers, the ill. Who are the ills?
Illuminati, yeah.
Yeah, the castles and the bastilles, this ill word that keeps turning, is the Illies.
Yeah.
These are the Illies, are the lords of the world, the people who live on the mountains above us, who, keep us in serfdom.
Yeah.
So, and then in the Vanilla Sky, they're literally telling you at the top of this building that he's on, that it's the illies have created us, the elves. And yeah, this is all about you living in a projection of your fantasy body.
Yeah.
You're so divorced from reality that they can literally tune your... Because remember, consciousness is everything. Machine is nothing. Consciousness and attitude is everything. So tomorrow they make a computer that can, you know, holographically or virtually mimic or tune into or pick up vibration from a person's fantasy body. Absolutely, I'm waiting for it to happen, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah.
If somebody had said that, you know, Nikola Tesla couldn't create the remote control to move a little boat on the lake, and he said, I can do that, they'd have blinking, you know, hung you. They would have never believed it, that radio waves can travel, and one person in, you know, in Japan can talk to another person in America.
Yeah.
And no wires attached.
Exactly.
Listen, within one generation, that's already taken place.
It's amazing.
Yeah, before that, they were beating horses with these messengers running across Europe on a horseback.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they were sticking notes into pigeons, for goodness sake. And then 5 minutes later, they're able to talk without wires anywhere across the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, tomorrow they're going to have that. In fact, you relating to an image on television, which is just a video or a computer, which is just a bunch of pixels, it's your mind putting all that together.
Yeah.
Half the television shows are not even live. All you're seeing is an electronic phenomena.
Yeah.
On, you know, I mentioned this in the DVDs.
Yeah.
On the DVDs, I talk about the post-human world, the cybernetic world.
Yeah.
I talk about how when I'm on the screen, I'm saying to the audience, I am not real. You're just seeing, you know, a group of electronic data taking place on the screen that you're watching.
Yeah.
But it's your mind that believes that I'm talking to you this moment right now here in the studio.
Exactly.
So the mind is already doing it all.
Yeah. Yeah,
somebody plays a beautiful piece or an aria you're watching on television.
Mm.
They're just singing a bunch of musical notes. It's your mind that decides whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Somebody in the kitchen goes, turn that off, that's horrible, I hate that. You know, I was watching Iron Maiden the other day. You know, sure enough, somebody's going to call in from the kitchen, turn that rubbish off. You know, we're sitting there loving it, right?
Yeah, sure.
So it's attitude that, you know, is everything.
Yeah.
So there is going to be ways to create the human. So what I'm basically saying is that, listen, if it's that kind of consciousness that's so powerful in the world, of course that consciousness can create tomorrow another perfect window through the, you know, through the means of the body. There are 37 sensory inputs that go into the brain, yet we only use 5 senses.
Hmm.
So when they create a computer subtle enough to be able to register and work, just like in where they work with kinesiology, or the acupuncturists work with the needles to get into these meridians, into these subtle senses, and how, you know, they can put probes in your brain and tap right into the limbic realm.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind that tomorrow they'll be able to set up a computer system in which they do that. Scanning a card is as sophisticated as doing this. They've already got the sophistication.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see. Amazing. I mean, Michael, I think let's leave it at that for now, and we can certainly continue this conversation further down the road. And it's going to be very interesting, as you say, to see kind of how all of this plays out in the years leading up to 2012. And it's exciting to be here at the same time, right? It's very nice.
No, it is, because this is the age of revealing.
Yeah.
The age when we're going to get the answers that our ancestors never ever got. And when we're watching all of this phenomena taking place, we always remain consciousness of the motives as to why these things might be happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, all of these things are possible. Technological age and cybernetic age is already on its way. I already see people operating more like machines, more programmed, let's say, than they are human. And we have to then always remain, the intelligent man remains conscious of why human beings would want to make those choices in order to bring in that kind of reality. And that's more what I deal with, is the psychological underpinnings of why a man might choose the kind of world that becomes manifest.
Yeah.
And why he might put the leaders, you see, on the thrones above him that he does.
So everyone, check out michaeltsarion.com, and also, of course, you've got to get a hold of a few of his DVDs. Go to Origins and Oracles, one word, originsandoracles.com, and check out those DVDs that are simply amazing. Thank you again, Michael, very much for coming on the show.
You're welcome, Hendrik. Let's do it again. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You You have been listening to Red Eyes Creations Radio. Thank you for being a subscriber. Your support keeps RedEyesCreations.com alive. Until next time, take care.